ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नम नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरयत् From the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 7th canto, chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu, text number 10. Buri Beda Parakrita Utahote Svato Bhavat Vanyatam Shrotu Kamanam Guru Nam Kula Nandana. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O best of your family, has this pollution of your intelligence been brought about by you or by the enemies? We are all your teachers and are very eager to hear about this. Please tell us the truth. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj's teachers were astonished that a small boy could speak such exalted Vaishnava philosophy. Therefore, they inquired about the Vaishnavas who steadily taught it to him. In order that these Vaishnavas might be arrested and killed in the presence of Prahlad's father, Hiranyakashipu. I'll just go over this, kind of break it down in the beginning of the translation, O best of your family. Prahlad, of course, actually is the best of his family. He's born in a family of demons, and he is the greatest devotee. So this is actually very accurate when they're actually saying, O best of your family. And then this next part, has this pollution of your intelligence been brought about by you or by the enemies? Is pollution of your intelligence. Now this is, according to these demons, they're actually thinking that his intelligence is polluted. They're not seeing that he's a devotee and he's pure and this is actually good. So we can see also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Rukmi thought that Shishupal would be a very good match for his sister Rukmini. Now, this is according to his own judgment. He was actually thinking. He actually cared very much for his sister. He wanted the best for her. And in his estimation, Shishupal would be the best. And Krishna would definitely not be a good match for his sister. So this is his mentality. So he's sincerely wishing, a well-wisher, but he doesn't know what is best. So maybe even here in India too, when someone wants to actually join this Hare Krishna movement, of course in the West, it's very common that the family would be against it because this is some cult. It's just some brainwashing. It's just some, you're just following. You become a slave to some master who just exploits you, just takes all your money. You work like anything for him and you get nothing. This is very bad. Now, they're actually genuinely caring about the person. But they don't know what's best for the person because they're in ignorance. So I'm just thinking in India it's probably similarly. Families have some idea, some material idea of what they want their child to be. I know I've been to, in America, Satyanarayan Puja, and the person who's doing the puja says, so now is the time to ask God for blessings, that your children become doctors, your children become lawyers, your children become... I mean, there was nothing mentioned about becoming devotees at all. So I think this misconception is there in the population everywhere, but especially in the West when they don't never even heard of such a thing. The dress is very weird. the hairstyle is strange, although it's actually becoming, people are having strange hairstyles today. But years ago, it was definitely very, very strange. And out of love, I'm just thinking like in 1972, 73, out of love for their children, they paid, which would today would be equal to about $100,000, which is like about 400,000 rupees, I think it is, $100,000. They pay that much to someone to deprogram their child, to take their child from this kidnap. They physically take the kid, they survey the place, they find when the person's alone, and they grab him, they throw him in a van, they drive away, and then they work on deprogramming him. Now this actually, deprogramming, at the time when it first happened, I was like amazed how anybody can be deprogrammed. But it actually, you know, there is brainwashing. I mean, Srila Prabhupada talks about brainwashing, but he said, yes, we're washing the brain, because the brain is full of dirty things and we're cleaning it. And this is actual fact, that's what this chanting of Hare Krishna does. It cleans the brain, it cleans the heart, it purifies the whole existence. So in that sense, we're brainwashing. But this brainwashing means you make someone do or think something different than they actually would normally do. They don't let them sleep. They keep saying things. I'm not sure how it works, but in the beginning, when nobody heard of this, it certainly worked. After we became a little familiar with this process that they do, pretty much most devotees thought, well, if my parents do this to me, then what I'll do is I'll just, you know, fight it for a little while, and then I'll go along with it. I'll pretend that I'm a non-devotee. I'll do whatever they want me to do. You know, even if I have to eat meat, I'd eat meat, if that's what convinces them. And then as soon as they let the reins go, then you just run back to the temple. You know, whatever it takes. So after a while, it became harder for them to do this. But the point I'm making is, they pay $100,000. It was $10,000 then, but today it's approximately 10 times as much. $100,000 to help their child. They're not trying to hurt their child. They're trying to help them. They're trying to give them what's best in their own estimation. So here, Hiranyakashipu, in his estimation, this whole mumbo-jumbo Vaishnavism is just bogus. It's not anything real. The real stuff is the tangible stuff. Now, Hiranyakashipu, he was a demon. He was a great demon, greater than any demons we have today. I mean, the demons today are very insignificant compared to him. But even though he was a demon, he still followed principles. He performed austerities, he gave in charity, he did so many things that, you know, would look like he's good. But he did these because he thought these are the right things to do. So he had certain principles. And he thought his son was really messed up, and I have to help him. I got to do whatever it takes. So first of all, first thing I have to do is, whoever it is that did this, I got to kill them. Because this is the worst thing anybody can do to me, my own son. I'm sure Hiranyakashipu, even though he wanted to kill his son, he had some affection for his son. It's natural. They're natural. Your children are natural objects of affection. Just like we have children, and you can't help but love them. Now, if our children become demons, they become out and out demons and are totally against Krishna consciousness, still, we may have some feeling for them. We're not going to kill them because we're not demons. We're devotees. But we probably wouldn't have much to do with them unless we could try to help them. But if we saw it was completely useless, like here, Hiranyakashipu is trying to help his son at this point. He's trying to find out where this came from, where this bad ideas came from. And then we can straighten it out. First, we got to eliminate this source, because this is he's getting polluted. Here it says steadily. Oh, can't see without my glasses. But anyway, steadily. That steadily they're polluting him, little by little. So we have, you know, they're poisoning him. It's like giving him little doses of poison. And he's seeing it. So first, just be nice to him. find out, you know, and he's just this little boy. He's just this little boy, so it's relatively easy, you know. We're your teachers. The teachers are like the gurus, like the father. You know, we are your well-wishers. We care about you so much. You know, just tell us who it is. That's all. That's all. We just want to know who it is that told us to you. So the first thing is we got to get rid of this polluting source. Find out who it is and then bring him to me. I want him killed right in front of me. It's Hiranyakashipu. He wants to see them killed. So this is the demons. But in his own understanding, this is actually the best thing for Prahlad. Even not just in families, in religions. You find some born again Christians. I don't know how many in India. We have plenty of them in America. And they're convinced, unless you're a born-again Christian, you're going to hell. And that's that. So, obviously, we can't... There's certain people you can't preach to. You can't preach to... We say, don't preach to the faithless. If somebody is so stuck on a certain point, we don't bother preaching to them. But they certainly preach to us, and they try to convince us that this is a very... bad thing. Idol worship. This is, you know, because in the Bible it says you shouldn't worship idols. This is a very bad thing, to worship idols. Of course, they don't see because they approach the deity as an idol. Prabhupada said if you approach the deity as brass or stone or wood, then they will remain brass or stone or wood. But if you approach the deity as Krishna, Radha and Krishna, then they will reveal themselves to you that they're Radha and Krishna. They will reciprocate. So there's actually, of course, the Acharya Vigraha is an incarnation of the Lord, where it's a bona fide incarnation that one can actually worship this form and get the same mercy, the same benefit as if they're worshiping God in his form. In his Satchitananda Vigraha form. There's no difference. And you can certainly get the reciprocation from the deities as you would from Krishna directly. So if you approach them. So the people who don't approach them that way cannot understand that. Prabhupada also uses the example that this is a bona fide form. And if you approach Krishna in this form, then you'll get the benefit. He gave the example also of a mailbox. Now, if you put your mail in the mailbox, it goes to its destination. But if you just make up a mailbox and just put it outside, people put their mail in it, or someone else. I mean, unless you take that mail and put it in a regular mailbox, it's not going to get to its destination. So there's this idea of idols, or this idea of any other particular religion. There's the Muslims, there's the Christians, there's the Hindus, there's the Jews, and everybody has their idea that theirs is the right way. We also have our idea that this is the right way. So people say, how can you say they're any different? But we're saying that this Krishna consciousness is Sanatana Dharma. It's an eternal religion. You can still be a Christian. You could still be a Jew. You could still be a Muslim. You could still be a Hindu. But you're accepting that you're an eternal servant of God. And we can use the name Krishna, or you can use other bona fide names of God. So this is an eternal occupation. You're an eternal servant of God, whether you change from a Hindu to a Muslim or from a Muslim to a Christian. The position of an eternal servant of God doesn't change. So this doesn't change. And also, the Krishna consciousness just gives a lot more information than other religions. I remember being arrested once by a born-again Christian police officer. And he was really didn't like what we were doing. So we arrested, not because we're Hare Krishnas, but because we're selling books without a permit. So when we went to the police station, this Christian was trying to preach, and I was preaching to him. And I remember telling, apparently, I didn't know this, but I could realize it after things went on a little bit further, that apparently this police officer was very much this born-again Christian and probably tried to preach to the other police officers who really didn't like hearing it. So when he was saying something about the Bible, I said, well, the Bible is like a pocket dictionary, and the Vedas is like a college dictionary. It just gives a lot more information than the Bible. It's not that the Bible is false. It just doesn't say very much. So one of the police officers had this big blackboard that's on wheels, and he took the blackboard, and he wrote the Krishnas, and he put a line, one for the Krishnas, and he was keeping score. Because they couldn't themselves, you know, preach against Christianity, but they were really happy that somebody else was doing it. So, and that police officer was getting really upset. More with them, I think, than with me. But he couldn't defeat this Krishna consciousness, because it's absolute perfect philosophy. And you don't have to really, you don't have to give up. I was born a Catholic, but I was not very religious. And then I went into the Navy, and then I got into reading the Bible. I kind of got into Jesus Christ. And one thing I found, that all the Christians I met, they all stop at Jesus. And Jesus himself says, through him you come to the Father. So I was thinking, why do they stop at Jesus? He wants us to go to the Father. So I kept searching and searching. And he basically led me to Krishna consciousness. So if you really want the truth, you can come to it through any particular religion. And then I remember in the Boston Temple. Well, actually, I was... because I'm getting into it. Let me just stick with this particular verse. But there are people who believe in certain things. And they're convinced of these things, and they may not be right, and they may try to convince others of their, well, may try to convince devotees of their ideas as being more advanced or the right thing, and this may not be the right thing. And this is, and neophyte devotees, Kanistadakaris, that's right. Kanistas, the neophytes, devotees, right. They can be influenced by such preaching. And Prabhupada wanted us to come at least to the second class position, where even if we're not able to defeat them, but we still won't shake our faith in Krishna. We may not be able to defeat all their arguments, but still, I know Krishna's God, and I'm going to still surrender to Krishna. Actually, by preaching and meeting some opposing elements, and especially very strong opposing elements that we can't defeat, helps us in making our Krishna consciousness stronger. Because then we go back to the temple and we ask some devotee, well, what if somebody says this, you know? And then we come up with a really nice logical explanation as to what we can say in such a situation. Or we can think about it for a while, and then we can say something. I remember one thing I thought of is someone was giving some example. I don't remember the whole thing, but a rose by any other name would smell just as sweet. And this is, I think, Shakespeare who said this. So he said something like that. And I said, yes. Well, at the time, I didn't think. But right afterwards, I thought what I should have said was, yes. But the difference between the name rose and a rose, they're different. But in the absolute, the name and the object are the same. Of course, this was many, many years ago. I know that now. But at the time, I had to think about it. So you think about it, but then you come up with something that makes perfect sense. And even these people who deprogram the devotees, And the devotees then become non-devotees, and they actually go against the devotees. And they recruit them into preaching against the devotees and helping to deprogram other devotees. This was going on. I don't think it's going on anymore, but it was going on in early 70s. And there was actually a show on TV of the devotees, Hare Krishna devotees, and these Hare Krishna, these deprogrammed devotees. And then there was this this man from the military. He was a retired military officer who worked with brainwashing. This is actually what he did for 30 years in the military. And after he saw the show, he wrote in his comments that it wasn't the devotees that were brainwashed. It was the other devotees who were against Krishna consciousness that were brainwashed. He can tell by their answers who was actually brainwashed. So the devotees actually think for themselves. They're not being controlled, hypnotized, manipulated, but they're actually very thoughtful. Even in the beginning, the Bhagavatam is for the thoughtful devotees, for the thoughtful persons. So people who actually think more about life, the purpose of life, why am I here? You know, what am I supposed to do? People who are more thoughtful, not just going through everything mechanically. For instance, like in people who are Hindus, they do a lot of the same things we do. You know, we don't consider ourselves exactly Hindus. We consider ourselves Vaishnavas. Although someone could be a Hindu and also be a devotee. It's not a problem with that. But a lot of people I spoke to in the West, they told me, you know, now they're regular, you know, ISKCON devotees, that previously they did the same things, but they really had no idea why they're doing it. So it's not that they're doing something different, but why are you doing it? I remember having one couple telling me about how they're nice devotees now, initiated, but their parents would tell them on holidays, these special, like Janmashtami and stuff, you don't eat meat. Normally the family would eat meat, but on special days, you don't eat meat. They would purposely eat meat because it didn't make any sense to them. Why on this day you don't and on this day you do? You know, instead of not eating meat altogether, you know, so, I mean, they did some things, of course, that because they didn't know. It didn't make sense. There was no logic behind it. Why on these days you don't eat meat? So there's just things like that. And Krishna consciousness is such a nice thing. Prabhupada says, there are all kinds of consciousnesses. There are all kinds. There's dog consciousness. There's cat consciousness. There's this consciousness that Hiranyakashipu has. Prabhupada said that surfers, you know, surfing where you have a surfboard and you go on the waves. He says they're wave conscious. They saw the surfers in California. They're wave conscious. They're conscious of the waves. They're just so conscious of the waves. And Prabhupada called them, instead of surfers, sufferers. They're sufferers. So, but there's all kinds of consciousness. And Prabhupada said, out of all the kinds of consciousness, Krishna consciousness is the best. So if we can just be Krishna conscious, remember Krishna, remember his pastimes, and get absorbed in his service, remember his instructions, associate with devotees, all of these things will help us to become Krishna conscious and stay Krishna conscious. Of course, association, Lord Chaitanya says, is the most important. We have to associate. And Prabhupada talks about if you associate with drunkards, you become a drunkard. You associate with devotees, you become a devotee. So this association is very, very purifying. And in this group of devotees is such wonderful association. So enthusiastic. And chanting japa together. I mean, it makes it easier to chant japa. And when everybody's chanting enthusiastically, if you get one or two people just chanting in a corner, falling asleep, you know, it's. But when everybody's chanting, it just brings the enthusiasm for chanting japa so much greater. It's really very, very wonderful association. So this is, if you keep in that association, you will become Krishna conscious, just like a fire. You know, you put an iron rod in the fire, and then the iron rod becomes like fire. So if you stay in that association of devotees, you will become a devotee. You will become Krishna conscious. And Maya will certainly give many opportunities, many reasons why you should give up this association. And she's not going to let up. And at first you may listen, but after a while, if you can examine what your mind is like, if your mind is anything like my mind, it says such horrible, stupid, disgusting, ridiculous things, and yet I'm listening to this stupid mind. Why should I listen to you? Let me just, you know, see through the eyes of the Shastras. Let me just follow the instructions of the Guru. Why should I listen to this mind? In the beginning, when I first moved into the temple, back in the early 70s, you weren't a devotee unless you lived in the temple. I was following the regulated principles. I was chanting 16 rounds a day, but I still wasn't really, I didn't consider myself a devotee because I had to move in the temple. I had to surrender everything. So I did this for a few months in New York, but when I moved into the temple, I moved into the Boston temple. And we're having arti. I don't remember, I think it was evening arti. And I'm looking at Radha Gopi Balava. These are, many of you have been to Mayapur, the small Radha Madhava. Radha Gopi Balava and Radha Madhava and one other set were all made the same time, and they're very, pretty much very similar, almost the same. So Radha Gopi, that's what they look like. I'm just letting you know. So I'm looking at the deities and I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and my mind is telling me they're idols. You're worshiping idols. You're going to go to hell. And it's telling me, and I'm trying to say it's not idols. It's not. And I couldn't defeat my mind. Finally, I said, I don't care if I go to hell. I'm still going to worship them. And then once I said that, I felt this special mercy from Radha Gopi Balava just go over my entire body, reciprocating that, yes, this is the right thing. I had no doubts after that. And then I didn't have any problems with idol worship anymore. But the deities reciprocate. But they reciprocate actually as you surrender, they reward you accordingly. And they're not going to reciprocate. It's not like, well, first show me God. No, you first have to accept. You know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't think Lord Chaitanya was God. But then when he finally accepted, then he saw his six-armed Sadbhuj form. So first you have to have faith. You're not going to see anything or feel anything unless you have faith. The faith has to be there. So once you have faith, then Krishna will show you, yes. He will make your faith stronger. So the faith has to be there. And these demons, they also have faith. They have faith in the wrong thing. And unfortunately for them, of course, Hiranyakashipu, there's a whole, you know, he's actually Jai or Vijay. But the point is, people may believe in something that's inaccurate. And they may have some faith in it, but that faith isn't going to help them. But if you have faith in the right thing, then you'll, and you're sincere. If you're sincere and you have faith in Krishna, Krishna will definitely reveal in so many ways that He is real, and He will take care of you, and you can depend on Him, and He will give you this realization as you surrender. Krishna says, as you surrender, I reward you accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So here, Prahlad Maharaj, this little boy who knew more than all of his teachers and his father and everyone, was listening to them and wanting to try, you know, trying to convince him to reveal who it is. Now, so Narada Muni was actually preached, and he heard the teachings of Narada Muni. So Now, I mean, just another little thing. Does anyone think that Narada Muni is worried that Prahlad might give it away, and and then Hiranyakashipu will go after him? Narada Muni is just depending on Krishna. And even if he did tell him, he would accept that's Krishna's arrangement. Just totally absorbed in Krishna. No fears. Abhay Charan, fearless, taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So Narada Muni wasn't worried he might give it away. They might convince him. He wasn't worried whether they did or they didn't. He accepted it as Krishna's mercy, whether he told or didn't tell. And he certainly wasn't afraid. And there's nothing that they could do to Narada Muni anyway, even if they wanted to, unless Krishna sanctioned it. Just like there's nothing they could do to Prahlad. And another thing, that Prahlad's father, I'm saying that he really cares for him, he has affection for him, but still, this one thing, if you're going to, you're not going to listen to anything I say, you're going to be totally defiant of me, you're just totally against me, that even though I have affection for you, I do love you, I care for you, still, I have to kill you. Because it just can't take it. And so, that's the way demons are. He cared for his son to try to help him, but when it came to the point where he saw there's no helping him, there's no way this person is too defiant, then I just have to kill him. And so he tried, of course, and he couldn't, which you'll get up to later. But it's just nice to try to understand how Prahlad's father and his teachers, on their own estimation, are thinking they want to help their son. Just like our family relatives, so many of us may want to help us by telling us how we should get so involved in God. I mean, I have different people tell me things. God, he wants us to be happy. He wants us to enjoy, He doesn't want us to just devote our life just to him and serve him. No, that's not what he wants. Like, where did he get it? It's what they want, They could say, people could say anything they'd like to say. But you have so many people. I had one conversation with my father who was, he said he was an atheist. He probably, I don't know what he was. Because Prabhupada says, there are no atheists in the foxholes, So when people are shooting at you and you're going to get killed, then you pray to God even if you were an atheist, He told me one thing. When I first got into Krishna consciousness and they found out that I was into this weird... I actually was walking with my mother once in downtown Brooklyn. We saw the devotees chanting and I was actually getting into Krishna consciousness at that time. And she said, look at those weirdos. Look at those weirdos. They're like weird people, dressed. I mean, they were strange. Nobody saw anything like this in the early 70s. That was probably 1970. But anyway, my father told me one thing, and later on I thought actually he was pretty intelligent. But when we had this one conversation, I said, I just want to be happy. That's all. And I saw that materially, there's no way you can be happy. I actually came to that conclusion. But when I told my father, I just want to be happy, he told me, nobody's happy. Which was pretty good. So not only did he realize he's not happy, but he also realized that there's nobody that in this world that's happy. So without Krishna consciousness, you cannot be happy. You actually cannot be happy. You can have all the material things. You can have a nice family. We had this one devotee who actually got initiated very young, and then he would come to the temple, but he wasn't chanting his rounds. He really wasn't accepting Krishna consciousness philosophy. And then he married this very beautiful girl from, she was from, not Australia, but right near Australia. And he was an Indian boy, so he had this nice, beautiful wife. Then he had a baby, a beautiful baby. And we're talking about how this material world, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punavatino Juna Mamupetya Tukanteya Puna Janma Nividyate, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all the places of misery, birth and death take place. So it's a miserable place. And he's kind of arguing with that, that it's not miserable, it's really nice. You know, he wanted his life, the way it was, to go on perpetually. He would be happy if it can go on like that forever and ever. That would be happiness for him. Anyway, there was no way of convincing him of anything else. He moved to somewhere else. And then I found out that they got divorced. So divorce is a horrible thing, and it's a lot of suffering. So I think he's gotten some realization that this world is not such a nice place. So even if you think it's so wonderful, even if for the time being everything is perfect, it's not going to last. It's temporary, temporarily perfect. You see a beautiful woman? Look, she's temporarily beautiful. Because look in 20, 30, 40 years, and then it's gone. You know, so it's temporary. The material happiness is temporary. It has a beginning and an end. So even if everything is perfect, you can't enjoy anymore, you love it, it's going to end. Usually, most people don't have even such a perfect situation. But if you actually had such a nice situation materially, it's going to end. Everything is temporary in this material world. But our desire, you know, for happiness is unlimited, and we don't want it to end. We don't want our happiness to end. You can't really be happy knowing it's going to end. And the reason you're happy materially is because you think that it's not going to end. If you think it's going to end, you can't be happy. I could give a quick example. I'm telling a lot of my own personal experiences, but before being a devotee, I'll make it short. Big Sur is a place in California up in the mountains where this is probably in 69. There was a lot of hippies. Anyway, we met all these people. I was by myself, and I was in a tent out in the middle of the night in a tent with about 30 people, and maybe even more. It was a big tent. And it was so wonderful. It was so fantastic. And everyone was like in ecstasy. And then we found out that nobody really knew each other. Maybe two people were together, and then one person, two people. So everyone was, but yet we met, and it was just wonderful. Almost like a kirtan, you know, for the material standard. But then one person said, "Too bad in the morning all this will be over." And when he said that, everything went, whoa, it went all down. Everyone was told, and I was thinking, what an idiot, what a fool, why did he say that? You know, he ruined it for everybody, because now we saw it was temporary. Of course, now as a devotee, I see he was actually the only intelligent person in the group who was able to see that it's temporary. But when you know it's temporary, at that instant, when he brought it to our attention, we couldn't enjoy it anymore. It was no fun. When we thought it can go on eternally, it was great. So this is one of the nice tricks of Maya, making it seem like it's going to last forever. And it's just flickering, chapala sukha, flickering happiness. It's there and it's gone. So anyway, it's time to end class. I got off on a tangent here. Anybody have any questions? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.